What do you get when you mix Shakespeare, fish wings, and picnics? You get a good reason to watch movies after work. Hey there, guys. This is Thomas.
And I'm Alex.
And this, of course, is Movies After Work, the show where tired dads put their kids to bed so they can then put a movie to bed. If you are a returning listener, thank you for your bravery. And if you are a first-time listener, yeah, you just backtrack and scroll. You just missed your true crime podcast. It's okay. Happens to the best. yeah, and it's going to get better today because we are not going to be tackling this episode alone. We have, from Movies For Real, Malik.
Hey, how's it going, guys?
It's good. Good. We are really excited to have you with us today. We are really excited to have you come on. I know you and I have talked a lot about us doing something together, so I'm glad that we finally made it happen.
Don't take a little bit off our schedules.
Yes. Yes, the challenge of scheduling. Now, just in case, why don't you tell everybody listening about your show?
Well, for me, it's just, you know, myself, and usually it's 5 to sometimes 10 minutes when I can make it that long, where I just talk about old and new movies I have seen. It doesn't have to be something that just came out, whatever, but my podcast, I've taken like a hiatus, but we're coming back in October, where that whole month I'm going to talk about, you know, horror movies, probably like 2 episodes a week, and then some classics and some more recent horrors that I've seen. So I'm excited for that.
Yeah, I'm excited for that too. And I applaud your reserve, because how many times on this show have we gone, yeah, we don't have much to say about this trailer, so we're just going to breeze through it really quickly. 15 minutes later, we're finally realizing, oh, we should probably move on. We have everything else in the episode to talk about.
Yeah. So, what's your excitement level for Halloween?
Like the season?
Halloween Kills.
I'm really excited for that. I mean, that's been on my top, like, anticipated movie for so long. Like, I've been waiting for this movie. We're supposed to get these back to back to back, and I had to wait another year. So I'm really excited for that. Can't wait.
Dude, the last 2 times that I've been in a theater that they played that trailer, it's the fucking cock tease trailer, where it's not the full trailer where they show the whole town at the end. Lean over to whoever I'm with and get real excited, and then they show 20 seconds, and I'm like, well, that's not as impressive.
Yeah, that's how I remember the first time I saw it. Like, I think it was for maybe Hitman's Wife's Bodyguard or something. It was like they had a trailer for it. I told it to my friend, like, oh my gosh, we're about to see a trailer on the big screen. It was a 20-second trailer. I'm like,
yeah.
All right,
great.
Yeah, we don't delve with that too much at the theater I work at. So when people get to watch that trailer, they get to watch that trailer.
Nice.
And pretty much every single time we test screen any movie, that's one of the trailers that's always going to be attached until the movie comes out. So
yeah,
but
I'm a big baby when it comes to horror, but I might have to venture into the theater to see that one.
That's the one weird thing is, like, when I was a kid, I was like afraid, like terrified, like the Halloween theme music would come and I'll start bawling my eyes out, and I like. I've grown up, and now, like, I'm like, prone to it. There's very minimal things that will, like, freak me out or make, like, gore is the only thing I get kind of squeamish sometimes, but other than that, it takes a lot to faze me.
Yeah, I definitely am that person who kind of sits there squinting, going, what's gonna happen?
We're already on this tangent, so let's keep going. I mean, I just remember me watching I think it was the Pet Sematary remake trailer at Tom's house, and when you see the kid underneath the steps who's about to cut the Achilles tendon of the old grandpa walking down the steps, and I was just like, oh, fuck. Like, yeah. I was like, no, we're not watching this.
Dude, some people hate the remake, and I'm actually one of those people that I appreciate. I watched the original, like, I grew up on the original, but I kind of prefer the remake because it's more dark, like how Stephen King intended. Yeah, I feel like the first original Pet Sematary was, in my opinion. They delve more in, like, grief in the new one.
I mean, I think it's... I get where people come from when they don't like the new one. I don't think it always necessarily comes from them preferring the original film. Of course, I've yet to see anyone go, yeah, you know, best Pet Sematary so far? TV movie. That one, that was a slam dunk. That I still haven't heard yet. But beyond that, I've heard all the different variations. But yeah, speaking of trailers, let's dive into some trailers, guys. So let's start off. I don't know if either of you had watched the trailer for Spencer yet.
I did just before you called.
Yeah, it's the for anyone wondering, it is the new Kristen Stewart biopic about Princess Diana, the weekend that she essentially decided she was done being married into the royal family. Right before, allegedly, Queen Elizabeth got all of her people together to plan how to strike. Notice how I said allegedly.
I mean, we don't see, her mannerisms are what's selling the performance, because we only hear one line from her in the trailer. But I mean, it looks gorgeous. It looks very much the period, and there's a nice attention to detail there. I don't know if this is something I am super stoked to see, but it looks interesting nonetheless.
I think it'll be an Oscar-worthy performance from her. I have that feel. It has that vibe to it that I think like this will be like her movie that puts her in the talks.
I'm confident that this will be a movie worth watching for her performance. I'm not confident that it'll be worth watching anything else about the movie.
I think my mom, this movie feels like something my mom would love. Like, she loves, you know, all that stuff. I think she'll love it. But for me, like, will I watch it in theaters? No, probably not. Yeah. But when it comes out, like, maybe, you know, I'll give it a watch. You know, if people say her performance is, you know, really, really good, like, yeah, I'll check it out.
Yeah, it's one of those ones that if I get a chance to, I'll definitely try to slip into the theater to watch it. If my theater gets it, which who knows? Very good chance we won't get it unless it's a major Oscars contender. And then we may get it on its second round during the Oscar redistribution circuit. But beyond that, who knows? And I have heard, understandably, you know, people, you know, wishing that somebody who was actually British be playing Princess Diana. And I get that. I think the issue that we land on here is a mixture of business and of risk of repetitiveness. We have The Crown, the TV series now, and they've even gotten to the Princess Diana portion of things. So they're already doing the super on the nose, pristine casting, authentic casting, all that kind of stuff. They're already doing all of that. So if Spencer had been doing that, it would have felt like we were just, you know, everyone would have already written the movie off now as, oh, somebody's just trying to be The Crown. And everyone would have already written it off. But by going unconventional in the casting, now this movie's got talk, it's got buzz. The director and Kristen Stewart are most likely going to get Oscar nominations that they can raise their quote on. So, in a sense, they've succeeded in a big way with this.
Yeah, it's really crazy with Stewart how, like, she went from, like, Twilight to me not even, like, really liking her that much, to be honest. And then, like, how she's developed, like, as an actress is, like, insane. Like, I was, like, talking about it on Twitter, like, just seeing her career is really interesting.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, her career, ironically, at some point, whether it's a biopic or a fictional movie, her career is eventually going to be the subject of a film.
Yeah.
because you've got this person who was, you know, she was making movies, she was doing just fine. Then she gets big with a franchise that makes her popular with one group but doesn't really gain her any respect. Then, you know, basically loses her fandom for having an affair. And then disappears and then suddenly reemerges on the indie circuit as, like, the biggest, one of the biggest names in the foreign film market. And has built her career up from that. So, it's pretty spectacular and pretty impressive to see where she's come from.
Yeah.
But, yeah. So, I mean, that's Spencer. Now, obviously, the big trailer to talk about this week, the big one that we're all excited and waiting to have swing into theaters, obviously, is the next thing we need to talk about, and that's Moonfall. Obviously, Moonfall. I'll tell you what. There's not a lot of prep that went into this episode, but I'll tell you what was prepped. My determination of saying swinging into theaters and then saying Moonfall.
Yeah.
I was weirdly determined to do that. It's the whole dad joke-ness that exists in me now, I guess. I don't know. But, yeah, Roland Emmerich has a new film coming out, and if you haven't seen the trailer...
You didn't need to say the director's name. We all knew who it was. We all knew who it was. I did not see the credits. I saw the trailer, and I said, this one is.
But it's like a third of the way in that says from director Roland Emmerich.
Yeah. But still, and I'm from the title of the movie.
Well, and I'm sitting there and I'm watching, and I'm going, I'm not sure if this is like a disaster movie or if it's Alien Invasion. Like, I'm not sure what this is. And then it had his name, and I went, oh, disaster. It's a disaster film.
I didn't even watch the trailer, and from the name, I kind of see, I was like, is it, like, you know, is it a disaster movie? Like, it just seemed like something that you see on, like, Sci-Fi Channel back when I was younger. Like, I'm like, it has to be, like, a disaster movie.
But that's his career, more or less. He makes big budget sci-fi TV original movies.
Yeah.
With blood. I mean, and there's nothing wrong with that. He knows his audience. He's servicing his audience because there's a large majority of the population, for whatever reason, that really likes to go to theaters and see entire cities, or in this case, a planet destroyed. So, you know, why not? I mean, it's fun to see destruction like that, and hopefully you have charismatic actors to follow along the way.
Well, this one has Patrick Wilson.
Resolve the moon crashing into the Earth.
I think this is another one of those ones where we reveal that, like, you know. Well, and knowing Roland Emmerich and his propensity for hating people and making it clear in his movies, he's probably going to have an Elon Musk / Jeff Bezos type douchebag who's got a gigantic Noah's Ark rocket that's going to go into space, and so a bunch of people are going to try to get on it.
Yeah, it's going to be the end of episode 4 of Loki.
Yeah. Yeah.
I mean, that's exactly what it is.
He might just do that, and it'll be Loki meets 2012. he might surprise us all, and we'll just kill the entire cast off in this movie and just say, screw it. But, I mean, he knows how to shoot these disaster sequences. These effect-heavy disaster sequences. He knows how to film them. He knows how to make them look good. Even if it's not your cup of tea, it's still, like, I still remember, because Geostorm was also one of his, right?
I mean, that sounds right.
I can fact check it.
Yeah, I'm, like, 98% sure that Geostorm was one of his. But even if it's not, the buildings exploding in Independence Day is iconic. The way that they got the fire to go through the streets of New York is iconic.
It's not one of his, Geostorm.
Really?
Dean Devlin did that one.
Oh, so his protege.
Yeah.
That's his... Yeah, because that's the guy who used to, like, produce a ton of his movies with him. So that makes sense. That makes sense why it feels very much like a Roland Emmerich film, because it's Roland Emmerich light.
Yeah.
Diet Roman Emmerich.
I'm just looking at this cast for Moonfall, and they got a good cast.
He gets a good cast. Because, I mean, the movies are so effects heavy that it's got to be a quick, easy shoot for all these actors.
Oh, absolutely.
Plus, yeah. I mean, right now, how hard does it have to be in Hollywood to get actors to be in your movies when God knows when? When suddenly they're not going to be allowed to make movies again for a while.
Yeah, they'll take anything, dude. Any script you put in front of them, they'll take it.
Well, it's like around every single writer's strike, there's always movies where you go, how the hell would they get this person? And the answer is always, well, there was about to be a writer's strike or a SAG strike or something where there wasn't going to be any work, so they were taking all the work they could get and trying to film it all before the strike started.
Yeah.
There's like a third of John C. McGinley's IMDb page that's dedicated to him doing that. But
all right, we're 20 minutes into the show without talking about the actual trailer that swung into theaters.
First of all, we're 16 minutes in, asshole. Second of all. We are talking about the most important trailer. We're talking about Moonfall. You're looking at your best visual effects winner. You're looking at the winner of however many best sound Oscars they've condensed it into by the time that they've, you know, actually given out. At this point, they're just going to give whoever wins best sound, like, just an Oscar head. And just give it to them on, like, a keychain, you know? Like.
Yeah.
But yes, fine. Sure. Spider-Man.
Yeah, that's the big one.
Yes. Spider-Man, no way to market.
So what are your thoughts, Tom?
It okay. did not do anything to make me feel better about the movie.
Really?
First of all, this trailer is so, it's very clear that Sony is in charge of the marketing, not Marvel. Two, I still would rather see new characters than be going back to the well. And three, I don't like that Sony is combining a crappy storyline from the Spider-Man canon and using that with a mixture of their Miles Morales movie that was successful and using those to make a Spider-Man movie that's clearly going to be more about how much we love the Sony movies instead of telling a story about this Spider-Man. So, I'm still not sold. I'm just not.
I'm not gonna hide my excitement level for this. I'm unabashedly excited for this. I understand and can totally respect your trepidation with that. But I do think there is a novelty to seeing Doc Ock, you know, Alfred Molina as Doc Ock again, and Willem Dafoe as Goblin, as we are going to more than likely see. I do think that we're going to see Tobey Maguire and Andrew Garfield at this point. I think they're just waiting until the second trailer or final trailer to blow their load on this. I do think there was a Marvel mandate of don't show your final scene in the trailer like you always do for every Spider-Man film, because I do think this is mostly first act stuff.
It looks like first and second act.
Yeah. I think I don't know, I'm super stoked for this. I'm excited to see Tom Holland as this character again because I think he pulls it off so well. Zendaya as MJ is awesome as always. I do think, you know, you're right to be skeptical, because we probably would have gotten a much smaller, more intimate, you know, Peter's final year in high school, and do we do the secret identity reveal? You know, I wonder if we would have gotten all those things had there not been the success of Spider-Man Into the Spider-Verse. But I don't necessarily think that capitalizing on the success of something else means that this is going to be inherently bad, just for, you know, based on that alone. And I mean, Marvel's constantly changing and playing with our ideas of comics and storyline. I mean, when you break down Captain America Civil War, it doesn't have a whole lot of similarities. It doesn't have a whole lot to do with the storyline in the comics. It's, hey, we're taking this recognizable, you know, it's almost like using an IP because it's a successful IP. You know, we're using this successful comic book series. We're not adapting it one for one. But there's going to be similarities, and we can call it Civil War, and people understand that there's an importance to it, and people who are familiar with comics are excited by that alone. Because, you know, there was, I love going back to watch that video of when they announced Phase 2, and they were going to call it, you know, they said they were going to call it Captain America Serpent Society or whatever it was.
Oh, yeah, and then it changes. Then,
Yeah, and then Kevin Feige says, you know what, I think we should call it this, and it changes to Civil War, and that pop from the crowd is fucking awesome. Like, that was a moment there. So,
I mean, like, I love the trailer. Like, I'm really hype about, like, the movie, but I do see, Tom, where you're coming from, where you're worried. It does seem like, at the very end of Far From Home, they have that storyline that they want, and now in No Way Home, it feels like they're scrapping that, like they're doing, like, real quick, like they're just glossing over it and then replacing it with something else that they want to do. It does feel like you obviously have to see the movie first, but it does feel like they're just kind of rushing it. And I don't know if 2.5 hours, if that's how long this movie's going to be, I don't know if that's enough because of how much they want to, like, kind of shove in here. But, I mean, I am really excited for it. For better or worse, I still think I'm going to love it because I'm a huge Spider-Man fan, so I'm kind of biased. So
I honestly, I just hope that this is a incredible flex by Kevin Feige, because that's everyone's number one, you know, probably one of the number one skepticisms or you know, reservations right now, is that it is so closely, apparently, adapting One More Day, and everyone's like, one of the worst Spider-Man arcs, like, how are you going to do this? And everyone's going to come out, and Kevin Feige's just going to be like, why did you ever doubt me? Why did you ever doubt me? Like, yeah, I've never steered you wrong before.
But it's, and still it, people. He's not the one we doubt, though. It's the guys who think that it's the guys who think that Men in Black and 21 Jump Street would make a great crossover movie.
Oh, yeah, that was awful. I remember those rumors. That was awful. I was like, no, please don't do that.
I don't understand the reservations there. I don't see two franchises that would gel more easily.
Feel free to think that, I guess.
I just think the Spider-Man movies are going to be, there's definitely, it's going to be a split, just like Far From Home was. Like, I love Far From Home, but I know people who hate it because they think Spider-Man doesn't, like, the Tom Holland Spider-Man doesn't really, like, go by himself. He's always, you know, Tony's boy. Yeah. Pretty much. So, like, people don't like that. And I do think in this one we are going to get where it's like Tom Holland has to be his own Spider-Man. I do think Doctor Strange is not going to be, you know, holding his hand through this movie.
Yeah.
I think he is. I mean, I'm in agreement with a lot of people that I've heard who, you know, we see that chase scene, where Doctor Strange is on the train and he's kind of forming multiple trains around Peter, and there's that scene where Spider-Man has the box and he's sort of punching Peter's consciousness or whatever out of his body the way the Ancient One did that to Strange. Like, I do think there is going to be some conflict between the two of them. Like, you know, Peter's taking it upon himself to try to reverse the spell, and he's trying to take this thing from Strange, and then there's a conflict there. But I mean, I understand that complaint, and I see that levied at the Tom Holland Spider-Man a lot, that, you know, he's very reliant on nanotech and Stark technology and being by someone's side, but I mean, I've just been accepting of it now, this version of Spider-Man. I really enjoy it. I understand if people don't, but if you don't, there's the comics to look to, and there's the Tobey films, and, you know, we've had... Yeah. This is at least different, and you might not like the way they're doing it, but we're three, you know, we're three movies in, plus, you know, appearances in Avengers films and in Civil War. Like, if you don't like this version of the character, he's not, I don't think he's changing anytime soon. I don't think he's going, you know, we're not going to be the third or fourth film in, and he's going to have a cloth suit and web shooters. You know, he's had all of this technology at this point. I think he's only going to sort of rely on it more and adapt to what new tech he has.
And I already had this discussion with Tom, I'm pretty sure, on Twitter before, and that's a fact that I always say that this one, he's in the Marvel Cinematic Universe. He has access to that technology. You cannot tell me if Tobey Maguire, Spider-Man, or Andrew Garfield had access to that technology, they wouldn't use it.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Yeah. Like, they would use it. They're not in the Cinematic Universe, they really can't. So that's why they're alone by themselves.
I think it's a natural progression of the character in the MCU, and I love the relationship he had with Tony Stark, and it makes sense if Tony Stark takes you under his wing and wants you to hold your own against Captain America and, you know, fighting Thanos and taking on these larger-than-life threats. He's going to build him a suit to protect him because he is sort of his protege. So, yeah, why he would disregard it now, but it wouldn't make sense to the character, and it you know, this is the version of the character that we have, so you're either happy with it or you're not.
The only way I could see him maybe is making everyone happy who doesn't like him is at the end of knowing him, they keep it where everyone does not know who he is. Like, that means even the Avengers don't know who he is. So then he has to be by himself. He has no one. He can't just go walk in and get that technology. That's the only way I could see that to make everyone happy, if that's what they want to do with the character, if it bothers them so much.
Yeah, that's not a bad take.
And it might be what they do. Mm. You know, we don't know for sure. It might be what they end up doing. But we're just gonna have to wait and see. I just know for me, I felt like a lot of the questions I was asking after watching the trailer were not the questions they probably wanted me asking. Because literally, like, I watched the trailer. And then, I admittedly, this one was on the second time of watching the trailer, but I was watching the trailer the second time, and they have that whole train sequence, and I just suddenly found myself going, do not tell me Tom Holland or any Spider-Man that are in this movie have to relive moments from previous Spider-Man movies. Please tell me that what we're watching... Please tell me what we're watching right now is not him him experiencing the Spider-Man 2... train sequence.
I love it. Thought of that as a possibility. I sincerely don't think that's where they're going to go with it, but, you know, I guess if that's a concern, then that's a concern. But
that's not actually Doctor Strange, that's Dr. Octopus.
And that's the thing, is that we also know that Sony is desperate to make themselves a permanent staple of a permanent staple of the MCU. So, I mean, a lot of what people don't like about this Spider-Man would have gone away if we could have just eliminated Sony from the picture. Because Sony's going to make us over-involved, so, you know, he's got to be attached to the hip of Tony Stark. He's got to be, you know, he's got to have all of these characters that are reoccurring and all this stuff. And Marvel's gonna be like, okay, look, we need to be prepared for the fact that, okay, that we might never get him back, so we can't have him be a major player. He has to be somebody who, if we have to lose him, is not a critical key to anything. So as a result, Spider-Man's had to be this side player who's piggybacking around with other characters, but that's essentially, like, Marvel has to protect themselves, because if they make him critical, then Sony's in charge.
I think, you know, and that's probably why we don't see, even in the solo Spider-Man possibly, but, you know, that's why we're not seeing characters like Black Cat or, oh gosh, I'm blanking on everyone, but like characters who would be more synonymous with Spider-Man. I mean, I get that we're getting his villains, but they don't want to introduce too much because, well, we can't have this character interact with, well, there was, you know, this character from the MCU because they would maybe reference them later, and we don't want to, you know, sort of muddy that.
Yeah. And, I mean, at one point there was supposed to be a Black Cat movie coming out, so...
Yes. Black and Silver.
Yeah. Yeah.
The Black Cat Silver Sable movie.
Yeah, they were... I mean, this is all stuff that... Sony is going to try to run this dry, except for the fact that, you know, Venom 2 does not look good.
They already have, yeah.
And they can't get anyone to be excited about about Morbius. Like, no one.
Well, I mean, Go ahead.
They can't get anyone excited about this movie, and they can't get themselves to release the frickin' movie. So it's gonna be this movie that's just gonna end up taking a giant loss for them.
Yeah, it's gonna be New Mutants.
Yeah,
it's gonna be a movie that sits on the shelf forever, and it comes out, and no one gives a shit.
Yeah, that movie was That's all.
I mean, and that was sort of a kiss of death for I mean, they had already bought them by then, but...
Imagine that being the last movie you released.
I mean, it was released after the sale, and so Disney was basically like, this was already taking a loss, let's just dump it, let's, you know, not put much marketing behind it, and just let it sort of go out there and just...
That sucks, because I was actually, like, way back when this movie was, like, the first trailer, I was actually excited for it, because I was like, okay, it's like a horror movie with, like, you know, all these, like, characters, and then, no, it was not what I, and then it was getting delayed, I'm like, oh, no.
Like, it had all these upcoming stars from Game of Thrones and from Stranger Things, and people were excited about it, and then the interest waned for Game of Thrones, and the interest waned for Stranger Things, and... It came out and no one gave a shit.
And the reshoots, dude, there was a lot of reshoots for that movie.
Yep. Yeah. It was just, I mean, it was plagued with issues. And this, like, this, I mean, this Morbius movie, first trailer came out, everyone laughed. Nobody sat there and was like, oh my god, this looks great, I can't wait.
Yeah, no,
everyone, even in the height of people liking Jared Leto, which, shame on everyone for that one. But even in that moment, they still could not get anyone to watch that trailer and be excited. The only thing people couldn't even get fully excited about Michael Keaton showing up at the end of the trailer because it was just like,
no.
Because they were just like, oh, wait, are we going to be stuck with Jared Leto fighting Tom Holland? None of us want that.
And they're like,
well, no, the only hype surrounding this trailer was Michael Keaton. And the fact that it looked like Sam Raimi's Spider-Man in a wanted poster in the background. Yeah. That's the only thing anyone talked about. No one talked about Jared Leto. Like, no one cares to see this character portrayed this way, coming from this studio that has, you know, mishandled so many of these characters already. You know, this is just, no one asked for this. No one
like, and I don't know much about, like, Morbius, like, that, like, I know, like, a little bit of what I need to know, but from the trailer, if I had no idea who this character was, and I wouldn't want to watch it. Like, I wouldn't, would not make me want to go watch it.
Yeah.
I'm also wondering, I'd have to look back at original release dates, look back at that history, but I wonder if Morbius was supposed to come out before Spider-Man No Way Home, and what impact on the store, on continuity to Morbius, if they're going to include characters and wanted posters for Spider-Man. I wonder what the continuity issues are going to be with No Way Home coming out before it.
That's what they're doing for the next couple months before the December release. They're just erasing Jared Leto from all the frames that he was in No Way Home.
Oh, jeez.
Gee, I like Morbius is gonna be real, like, just it's gonna be really bad, and like Venom too. Like, I do like the first Venom. Like, it's like a guilty pleasure. Like, it's not the best movie, but I can sit there and watch and just like drink or whatever. And I think it's gonna be the same thing with Venom 2. It's gonna be have my buddies come over and we're drinking and we're watching it, but not really paying attention. Yeah, it's that movie still in the background.
I have to drink to get through Venom as well.
It'll be a movie that I occasionally do theater checks, poke my head into the theater and go, what's going on? Okay.
And then that walk CGI out. Final act.
Walk in, like, oh, look, oh, yeah, that's right, Naomi Harris is in this movie as a random role for no reason. Man, she doesn't seem involved with this movie at all. That's a shame. Yeah, I don't know. The reality is that Sony, if Sony can't get Venom 2 to work for them, they have to already know that Morbius is going to be just a loss. And it took people 5 seconds to get bored with the idea of them making a Kraven the Hunter movie.
Yeah.
So they've got nothing.
It's going to end up like Black and Silver. It's going to end up like everything else. They announce 6 projects at once.
Yep.
People don't get excited about any of them, or they get excited about one of them, and then they push in that direction. But the only characters they can play with are the villains, and we've talked about this before. I think we talked about this when we discussed the possibility of Tom Holland meeting Venom. You can't make Venom your villain in a Spider-Man film when he's been the hero for 2 previous films.
Yep.
You know, it's the Kong versus Godzilla problem when these 2, you know, characters are the protagonists. It ends with a draw, or it ends with them fighting a bigger threat together. I mean, and that's just boring. That's just boring at this point.
Like, all I can hope is that all these movies just are going to do awful, and hopefully they're like, okay, we can't lose any, like, more money. We'll just release Spider-Man to Marvel Fool. We'll just release them. You guys can have them.
Yeah,
I'm pretty sure I've
said this before on the show. Sony's going to get, you know, Sony Japan is going to become uninterested in making films, and they're going to be like, we'll make TVs and PlayStations, and we'll make enough money, and we don't need to own a, you know, struggling movie studio anymore. So,
yeah. They'll sell Sony back to Marvel for a fee to make up their losses in a heartbeat. And then it'll just be a question of who's going to buy Ghostbusters from Sony?
Well, I heard that was really good, though. Like, that's the thing, too, is that, like, I feel like they can make, I just feel like with the Spider-Man, they don't understand Spider-Man. I seriously don't think they do. They don't understand Spider-Man. They don't understand the character or his world at all. Well, like, Venom doesn't even have the spider on his freaking chest. I mean, like, come on now.
I think Marvel put the kibosh on that. Yeah. They're like, you can play with Venom. Don't put the spider on his chest.
I mean, regardless, what we've learned over the past dozen years is that what made most of these Marvel movies work was Kevin Feige, even before the MCU was established. Yeah. It was his knowledge. I mean, for the love of God, the X-Men movies were started by going, we don't care about their characters, we don't care about their personalities. We're just going to randomly throw a dartboard at the characters that we think have the coolest powers / are the most known, and those are the characters that we're going to use.
Yep.
Which resulted in them having nowhere to go with anything.
Yep. Yeah, because that's the thing with those, like, these comic book movies is you got to have, like, a cast or even, like, just, like, people around you that understand the material. You can't just be like, oh, superheroes are cool. I guess we're just going to pick a random comic, okay? And here's a character. Let's use them and not know any history about the character, nothing. Like, that's not going to work.
Yeah. I mean, we've talked to this to death, but that's why every X-Men movie just turns into a Wolverine movie.
Yeah.
Yep, exactly. Yep. Yeah, they know.
Yep.
Logan was really good.
Yeah, that's why first
class. And I wonder why.
That's what people think, yeah.
It's not even in the timeline. It's a separate timeline.
It's a movie that depends entirely on the emotional weight of, wait, which Wolverine are we talking about here? Do I know this one's backstory to know the emotional weight of the history of this character?
It's like, well, wait, wasn't Stryker just Mystique in disguise at the end of
Days of Future Past?
It's like, Yeah, but we want to see him in the Weapon X getup, so Stryker can have him back. It's like, well, how did Stryker get him back? It's like, it doesn't matter. We just want to see. We just want to see Hugh Jackman in the Weapon X getup.
It's convoluted, dude. It's like, we don't care, man. Just get Hugh Jackman. Get calm.
It's super convoluted. Stryker put out a Craigslist ad, and Wolverine fell for it and got kidnapped. I just worked harder on explaining the logic of an X-Men movie than anyone involved with an X-Men movie. But let's get away from the Marvel that makes us sad, and let's talk about the Marvel that makes us happy. Let us talk about Shang-Chi and the Legend of the Ten Rings.
Yeah.
Malik, why don't you start us off with some initial thoughts?
Well, it's fucking great. Like, it's like, I've been getting really close to making, like, a 10 out of 10. Like, there's like, maybe a little bit, like, at the end with the CGI I could, like, maybe complain about, but it's like, it's a nitpick at that point. Like, this movie's just everything about it, the cinematography, the choreography, like, it's everything about it. It's like perfect. It's what I like wanted. Not knowing anything about the character, it made me like want this, like, my one of my favorite Marvel characters in a new MCU.
Yeah. I went to see it with my sister, and as we were driving there, she said, I have no idea what this movie's about. I have no idea how it connects to the MCU. And I'm like, I am so jealous of you right now. And honestly, I mean, I didn't have, you know, we didn't maybe have a huge understanding of how he tied into the greater MCU. We kind of knew about Wong and the Abomination. But I didn't know what else was going to pop up here. I was pleasantly surprised to see Trevor Slattery again. And Morris. I think every kid is going to love Morris. Just talking about the third act sort of CGI, when we're in, I'm going to butcher everything, but Tay Lau at the end of the film, I feel like I was maybe put off for a moment, but I feel like the film does a great job of enveloping you in that world. Yeah. So, like, the creatures, while they are strange looking, and, you know, they certainly aren't things that we could see in our day-to-day lives, you're so deep in this mystical, you know, land that you just sort of accept these things as part of the world. And I didn't really bump into any problems with the, you know, the dragon versus the demon soul sucker monster at the end.
That was cool as shit.
Yeah, I thought that had big fucking like Dragon Ball Z anime.
Yeah, dude,
I was all about it. I feel like what most people aren't ready for is how sort of like deliberately paced this is. I think this is intentionally a sort of not slow moving, but very thoughtful film. It's a lot longer than I expected it to be. There were moments where it dragged, but I mean, its length and the sort of slow build and the way we find things out and the way we learn about the Mandarin's motivations, because, you know, I'm sure many people, like myself, I was in the camp where I'm thinking that, well, the Mandarin's just evil, and he's after Shang-Chi for something, you know, and to realize his motivations are, like, yeah, I'm an evil dude, I've done some really bad shit, like, I'm not apologetic for what I've done, but, like, I have amassed this army and this power, and I'm gonna use it. You know, he wants to ultimately use it to get his wife, and while it's misguided and he's wrong, he's being led there by something else entirely, you know, he does have a motivation beyond, I'm an evil dude and I want to take over this land. So I thought that was very interesting, and the way that these characters find this out and the way that we discover things about Shang-Chi, I just really, really enjoyed it. I saw this movie very late, so I was very tired. So I've been watching reviews, and people will, like, talk about the plot, and see it in the theater, because I feel like what we've seen of Phase 4 thus far, like, we've seen very different, you know, very different corners of the MCU explored in Phase 4. You know, WandaVision was very different from Falcon Winter Soldier, which was very different from Loki, which is very different from What If, which is very different from Black Widow, and Shang-Chi just expands on that. And I think, you know, much like in Phase 1, where we finally see Asgard, and it's, you know, this new world that we've never seen on screen before, and it's breathtaking, and the same thing happens when we see Black Panther and we see Wakanda for the first time. You know, when we get to China and when we get to Talo, like, it's breathtaking, and to see another corner of the MCU explored here, it's really, really cool to see.
Yeah, it's really cool.
Agreed. I'm still here, motherfuckers. And Lee. I really, really enjoyed this film. I am so excited to see Shang-Chi continue on in the MCU and interact with more characters and find out more about what he's about. I don't know. For me, we did such a great job throughout the movie of making our villain, this guy who's literally heartbroken, desperately trying to retrieve his wife, and made that so compelling and so interesting, and Tony Leung just gives such an amazing performance with it.
Yeah.
That to ditch him for a big monster third act right out of the gate for this character's first movie, It felt very rushed. It felt very, we're jumping the gun a little bit.
Yeah.
Like, I would have, like, and to need the 10 rings to be able to open the door, and now your son is suddenly also able to wield them, so he's starting to take them away from you, and he won't help you, like, that's a panic thing. That's a made, like, your plan is falling apart. You're, like, we could have legitimately had this, like, really powerful one-on-one battle where we're also trying to open up this door that could essentially destroy everything, you know, and having Shang-Chi have to either convince his dad that, you know, what he thinks is going to happen isn't going to happen, or something, and, I mean, you could have it be in the, I don't know, I could rewrite things all day long. God knows I've done that plenty on this show, but I guess for myself, while it was really cool watching Dragon versus the demon from the end of Fantasia in a weird sense. While it was fun watching them duke it out and seeing some of the other stuff that was going on in that third act, I guess I wanted, especially for a first outing for this character, I guess I just wanted something more contained and something a little more intimate. And so I was disappointed that we didn't get it, and I worry that now we're setting ourselves up for failure when the second movie comes out if we don't outdo what we just saw.
Well, like, that's the thing, too, of Marvel, is I do understand, like, in the beginning, like, in Phase 1, I mean, Iron Man had, like, that, you know, that self-contained, like, it wasn't no, like, crazy, like, you know, CGI fest. And I think with Marvel, ever since, you know, their big team-up movies, like Avengers and stuff like that, they think that at the end you have to have, like, that big, like, crazy fight scene. And, you know, sometimes I do miss when it's like that, you know, not that much CGI and just, like, two of, like, the villain and, you know, the main character, like, fighting against each other. I do see where you're coming from.
Yeah. I think we've been running into that problem in the MCU for almost its entirety. But anytime a threat is forewarned, that threat is going to come to pass. class. Mm-hmm. Like, you know, it's the Dark Elves in Thor 2. They can't get the ether, so of course he's going to get the ether. It's Thanos. He can't snap his fingers. And once we got to the point where Thanos snapped his fingers and the end of Infinity War was what it was, I know now anytime a threat is introduced, that's what we're doing. So, you know, when we see Kang and he threatens that if you kill me, we're going to open the multiverse. Obviously, Tom and I talked about this last episode. That was kind of forecasted with the next Doctor Strange subtitle. But, I mean, when they say they're going to release this thing, I know we're going to get to the point where we release this thing, and it's a big, yeah, big fight at the end.
Yeah.
But I think there are the same sort of larger-than-life, you know, universe-ending stakes like there is in a lot of MCU films that, you know, don't necessarily need it. But I do think it is still an intimate story for Shang-Chi because this is him protecting his mother's home. This is him coming to terms with what his father did to him and understanding that while he was horribly misguided, he did still love his son.
Yeah.
And, you know, he does have a motivation that is fueled by his love for his wife and how he missed his wife and he missed the time in his life where he was able to put the 10 rings down and try to have some sense of normalcy.
He missed being able to Netflix and chill.
Yeah, exactly. He just had to get her back.
He wanted pizza night on Fridays. Like, you know, he wanted the family life, and I appreciate that. And I think while it sucks that Marvel fell into its trappings of, you know, we have a really cool villain, well, we have to kill him off after one movie, I do think the Mandarin was, you know, sort of talked about enough, and, you know, we knew that someone was behind Trevor Slattery, that, like, this was a, you know, a looming threat, and I did like his sacrifice at the end, because I felt like even though he was bested, even though there wasn't really a way out of that situation, he was relinquishing the rings to his son to say, you know, you were right. I shouldn't have done this. This, you know, your mother wasn't here. I should have listened to you. You know, you have to carry this now, and you're the last hope. So, and I think he knows his son is going to be more powerful than him with the rings, and that he's going to do greater things. He's going to have a purpose with them. And I think they made Shang-Chi so important with that final, you know, that end credit scene, you know, making those rings like one of the oldest things in the MCU. And it could have some really interesting implications, especially with it, you know, sort of sending out that homing beacon.
Yeah, and I like that's the one thing too is I really hope in like the sequel of Shang-Chi is that they make him not. I don't know if the. I hope they do this, that they do not have him have the rings the whole time, because you know that makes you like immortal. Like I hope it's like a thing where he takes them off so they don't like manipulate him like they did, you know, with his dad or whatever.
I was assuming he would just whip him out
when he needs them. You know, a big threat.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, that's kind of what I was assuming with him is that he's gonna avoid it unless he has to have him out.
I mean, yeah, we saw him kick so much ass on the bus, and you know, he's so capable without that.
Yeah.
You know, he's a much bigger asset even without the rings than people realize. So I don't think he's going to need to wear them at all times. I think that's going to make his character less interesting if he was to do that.
Agreed. And I do, like, I'm not sure if I'm going to push this guy's name, but Ping Zhang, he did the choreography, and he did a really fucking good job, like, teaching these, like, holy crap, like that. This is probably the best fight scenes I've seen since Winter Soldier. Like, they're really good.
Yeah, no, these were fantastic fight sequences.
Without question. The bus scene alone is worth price admission, I think.
Yeah, the bus scene is very, very well done. The whole battle in front of the neon is just, it's the pacing and the cinematography is like nothing else that we've seen before, and I thought that was fantastic.
So, are you good, Tom?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, I heard that too. I was like, what the hell?
I heard like beeping. on my end. I heard like beeping on my end, so I was like, "Yo, you good?"
Yeah, I assume that was the end of the recording.
It's all good. I cut the red wire. It's okay. You always cut the red wire.
I was wondering. I was like, I'm assuming that's what that is, but like,
we just hear a giant explosion.
I mean, that's what I thought. I thought a bomb was going off.
That'd be terrible. You guys would have given up your whole nights for an episode that wouldn't have aired.
No, I'd come back. I'd sift through the rubble and I'd intro it. Just rest in peace, Tom. This is our final conversation. You can hear the bomb detonating at the end. I'm not even going to cut it. I'm going to let everyone
let
in.
Let it play out.
He died as he lived. Confusing everyone with random noises. One of the other things I want to talk about, because I personally don't think this is getting talked about enough in general. Mengnir Zhang, assuming I'm saying that right, the sister, this is her first movie.
Really?
Oh, wow.
This is her first ever movie.
Wow.
And she nails it. She's phenomenal. Yeah.
That's crazy. And, well, that's a good first movie to be in.
Yeah, and I cannot wait to see more of her. Like, yeah, it was fantastic watching her. So yeah, I can't wait to see what more we get from her. And then also, just really quick, because this, I know this has been a big question on everyone's mind, and so I just want to make it very clear. If you pay attention, Bruce Banner has a glowing green thing on his wrist. He has a gamma regulator, so he can switch between what he is. Pay attention, people.
Yeah, definitely in She-Hulk, we're going to get more of like him explaining that techno, like what he has.
Well,
like what that technology is, explain it.
It certainly explains why, because they said he was going to be in She-Hulk, and I kept thinking, wow, that how much of the budget of that show is just digital, like
the visual effects
to make him Hulk. But now we know. The budget goes into making his wrist glow green.
Go ahead.
No, you're good. Go ahead.
But no, like, I just don't know what they're going to do with, like, she, like, having, there's no way they're going to have him be, you know, obviously he's not going to be, like, you know, Professor Hulk the whole show. Like, it's just, like, weird how they're going to, like, what they're going to do with him. Like, is he just going to, like, Ben 10, you know, change into Hulk, then change back to...
Well, and they've also, they also explained that his arm damage is permanent. Like, not even the Hulk can heal the damage that the Infinity Stones did to the arm. So, like, it's not like he's a big fighter anymore anyway. He's got a bum arm.
Which sucks, because we didn't get a solo Hulk movie, and that pisses me off.
Well, maybe people should stop saying that the Incredible Hulk isn't canon.
Yeah, I hate when people say that. I'm like, it is canon, guys. Like, that movie's not even that bad to me. Like,
If people would stop saying it, then, you know, we wouldn't be dealing with that. So, there you go.
Just the hate of that movie is why we don't have, another solo Hulk movie. Yeah. Like, we can't do it.
Yeah.
I mean, I think that movie's perfectly fine, and I think they're introducing, you know, we see Abomination here, we are going to see him again in She-Hulk, and they're, you know, we've introduced Thunderbolt Ross, and he's become such an important figure in, you know, from Civil War onwards. To be the big bad government, you know, guy that they need to, that they push up against all the time because, you know, they're an unregulated sort of thing. And, you know, the Thunderbolts are a thing in the comics, and Thunderbolt Ross is Red Hulk in the comics. And
yeah, we better get Red Hulk
avenues that they there's a lot of interesting places they can go with that. It seems like Madame Hydra is recruiting a team very similar to the Thunderbolts or the Dark Avengers. Mm-hmm. So I wouldn't be surprised if they're sort of funded or backed by Thunderbolt Ross. And I think that, you know, Marvel has done such a it's interesting. What did you guys think of Abomination and Wong together? Are they running a grift or something? I mean, I'm interested to see where that came, like how that all started.
I think I'm assuming that just at some point between Abomination's incarceration and this point, we've managed to like have a breakthrough with him to like make him a little more reasonable and a little more functioning. It's also very clear that Wong was up to a lot of stuff to keep the lights on during the 5 years of the blip. Oh, yeah. Also, I need to go rewatch the movie because there's a poster for some sort of app that's like the blip something one point in the movie. And I want to, like, I don't want to have to wait until the movie comes out to have to pause and zoom. I want to know what the hell that was, because I saw it, and then right before I could read it, it was gone.
Yeah, there was a bus ad that said, like, do you have blip anxiety? Like, call this number or join this group. It was
I didn't think that was a real thing. Well, no, there was literally, when they were going in some building, there were, like, a collection of posters up on a wall, and it looked like it was for some sort of app. It was, like, the Blip Finder or something like that. Where I was like, I don't know, maybe it's about, like, trying to reconnect with anyone that you lost or just being gone for... I was like, who knows what it's for, but I think it's hysterical that we're seeing the world marketing the blip, because it's so, I mean, it's so realistic. I'm already seeing people with shirts about Afghanistan, which I'm not getting into on the show. But... I'm already seeing people wearing shirts like that, so there are already opportunistic assholes out there about that. So it's no surprise that would also be true in the MCU. So,
but like the one thing about like I did like how they made Abomination like more comic book accurate as well. Yeah, they didn't make him like have you know the freaking skeleton is like back spine coming out. Like, yeah. They made him, like, you know, look, have the gills and, like, stuff like that. I thought it was pretty cool. And some people, like, my friends had no idea who that was. I had to explain to them. They're like, what? Like, I'm like, that's Abomination. Like, why does he look so, like, weird? I'm like, they changed his look for the comics, from the comics, so.
Yeah, no, I really appreciated that. I mean, I think his design looks way cooler. I do think that, you know, he probably had some time to cool off in the raft maybe it's, you know, Abomination was a more intelligent being than the Hulk is, but we saw how the Hulk, when he was, you know, on Sakaar, sort of grew into a toddler or young child, like, level of intelligence, so he could converse with Thor. You know, you can imagine that if what's his name, Blonsky or something? Blonsky. You know, if he's been the Abomination this entire time, maybe the Abomination's motivation sort of changed. But I think, I'm totally stealing this from Screen Crush, but, you know, I think Banner being Bruce Banner again, you know, there could be, it's obviously sort of a get-out-of-jail-free card for when he's in She-Hulk and they don't have to spend all the money in the world to make him Professor Hulk the whole time, but I think there's some interesting story elements that they could, you know, use that for. Is he repressing the Hulk again, and will the Hulk become frustrated again, and, you know, want to get out or want to be in control, or do they split, you know, like they've done in the comics before? I think it would be, there's some interesting avenues that they could explore.
Well, for some reason, I feel like in She-Hulk, it's just gonna, like, when that first episode, we're gonna see Professor Hulk, and I swear, they're gonna show us, like, how he changed back, and that's gonna be it. They're like, alright, now he's gonna be Bruce Banner all the time. It kind of explained, you know, why he can change back and forth. I just feel like that's how Marvel would, like, do, just how, because they don't want to spend, you know, millions or whatever of dollars on, you know, obviously that CGI is probably freaking gonna be costly.
Yeah.
Yeah, oh, definitely. But it's... And it's we're in this weird new reality with the MCU, where first of all you've got all these different factions. You've got, you know, Wakanda, the Sorcerers, even though Tony is gone, Stark Industries, you've got all of these different worlds with their different knowledge and resources and abilities that can all communicate with each other now. So, you know, Wong could literally have been working with the government to help them try to make Abomination somebody who could go out and fight crime during the blip, and it didn't work out. You know, it could be something as simple as that. There could be a bunch of different possibilities for all that kind of stuff happening. We also, with Shang-Chi, we finally have a superhero in Phase 4 that wants anything to do with being part of a team.
Yeah.
Like, most of our new characters or our characters that are getting a little more spotlight have been very, okay, leave me to my own devices, leave me the F alone, like, everyone go away, I just want to do my own thing. So, it's definitely a dynamic that's going to be very, very interesting.
So, do we want to speculate on what the rings are calling out to, or who the rings could be calling out to?
I think it's Galactus. That's what I would think. Because we got Celestials, we're getting introduced to, and like with the Eternals and all that. And I feel like Galactus would be a really good like Thanos type, threat.
So that's who
I'm betting on.
I don't know if they introduce Galactus at the same time that they're sort of introducing Kang. I do think it would be interesting for that to be, is that the Silver Surfer? Is that, someone on that level? With them making a point to say that the rings are ancient and that Captain Marvel hasn't seen this technology anywhere before, and Bruce Banner hasn't seen this anywhere before. I think
he said it's more than 1,000 when he's like, oh, it's from like, my dad's had them for like 1,000 years. It's like, they're older than that.
Yeah.
They're older than his father. So like,
yeah,
whoever it is not going to be someone good.
They definitely, there's definitely a few ways they can go with it.
I mean, right now my assumption is just that this is a celestial thing. It's going to be part of what gets the Eternals interacting with the Avengers. It could even turn out that we're going to link the Ten Rings with another character. It could turn out that, the Eternals thought they lost a member of their team, eons and eons ago, who just seemed to disappear, and all of a sudden here's their rings. Back in the world distributing the signal, which means that person is nearby, even though we thought they were gone, sending the Eternals post their first movie on a hunt for a powerful creature or a powerful something or other.
I do think there is something to the fact that they changed to that sort of yellow orange energy when Shang-Chi finally gets them. I think that's a clear I'm sorry, what was it? Wenwu? When he had them, he was powerful, but he hadn't unlocked the ring's true potential. That would be an interesting sort of, Shang-Chi has them and he's sort of worthy of unlocking its true potential. So, maybe this is Eternals tech and they link up with him, and that would be a very natural way for a lot of these Phase 4 newer characters to find one another and become a more cohesive sort of team.
Yeah.
For some reason, like, that ending fight when the Rangers were, like, going around Shang-Chi, I couldn't help but, like, kind of, like, smirk a little bit. It just reminded me of, like, they look like Sonic rings, like, going around, and I couldn't help but, like, smile a little bit. That's made me laugh.
Yeah, I definitely see that. That's Yeah.
Yeah, that's Marvel Disney's next big acquisition. They get Sonic and introduce him into the MCU.
Well, I do think that there's a, like, I could see, like, an internals, like, the end credits scene for that movie having to do with Shang-Chi. I could definitely see them, like, see, like, you know, a beacon or a signal and they're, like, you know, and explain. I could definitely, like, see that. Because they're definitely not going to, people should not be expecting no Spider-Man, no end credits scene in Eternals. That's not going to happen. That would be really crazy if that's, that would be really weird and out of place if they would do that.
I
think so. Well, Shang-Chi, for some reason, did think there's going to be some tie-in. Like, they just think every time end credits scenes are, like, a tie-in for, like, the greater, you know, like, it's like, no, it's, they're going to wait until No Way Home comes out to start that whole multiverse, like, end credits scenes and stuff.
Yep.
Realistically, yeah. But it was, I mean, this, I mean, overall, this film, yeah, it definitely... This and Black Panther have a lot of similarities, including Marvel Studios, for some reason, thinking if they're not white, we need rap music, which that has to stop. That has to stop.
The bus scene, is that what you're... The bus scene, I think they use a little bit, I think.
They use, like, three or four different songs throughout the movie.
Yeah.
I mean...
I don't mind it. I mean, I kind of, like, get into it, but...
That doesn't mean... I understand that complaint, but I think it's less. It's they're smart enough to not go, you know, hey, this character is a minority, hence let's use, you know, a hip hop song. I think it's more he's a San Francisco based, you know, millennial who has been indoctrinated with, you know, our culture, and he's. Most definitely listens to hip hop. I don't think that was like too far out of left field.
Because he's like a normal guy. Like we like his friend Katie thinks you know he's a normal guy, and like we know he's not. And then when he's him fighting in a bus, and that's the first time she's ever seen him do anything like that. She's like, "Yo, he can't fight. He can't fight."
Well, I mean,
it's definitely not as egregious as you know, like every time Will Smith popped up in Suicide Squad, they played a rap song.
Oh yeah, that was,
I think it was God. Like
I
was mad.
I
really good.
I was just gonna say, I still think there's a racial motivation, if for nothing else, in the fact that when you get Ant-Man, you get the Partridge Family.
Yeah, because he's a white dad in his 30s.
Yeah. What's the first word you just said? First word you just said.
I think it fits the character because, like, I just think we haven't had enough characters who would be listening to hip hop, you know. Yet you wouldn't have had it with Steve. You wouldn't have had it with Bucky. You wouldn't have had it with Tony because he's listening to AC/DC. You wouldn't have had it with, you know, these characters that have already been developed in the MCU. So I think it makes perfect sense to have it with Shang-Chi. I do understand where you're coming from, and there certainly could be an element of that, but I think it kind of serves the movie. I love that bus scene because it was the perfect way for someone maybe like my sister who hadn't watched a ton of the trailers. You know, the fact that we get Shang-Chi kicking so much ass so early in the film, and we see it as the audience, as, you know, Katie sees it and realizes it, I think it was really, really well done. I really like that aspect of the film.
Did you guys ever look at during that bus scene, like, the garbage man's face when they're going down, like, his facial reaction when they first hit? It's hilarious. I was dying, like, in this actor's face. He's so freaking scared.
They just overall did a really good job with this film. I love that Katie is the one that gets the whole metaphors and analogies and then just blunt truth growth.
Yeah.
You know, we make it seem like Shang-Li is that way, but no, he's got actual motivation for being the way he is. But she is that way, so we're going to give her that lesson and that growth and development in this movie instead of her just being here for the jokes. Despite the fact that, realistically, would they have dragged her around on and kidnapped her? Probably not. But, you know, whatever.
I thought she. I was worried when I saw, like, for the first trailer. I was worried because Awkwafina can sometimes get a little annoying. Some, like, it depending on what movie she's in. So I was a little worried. I was like, oh no, Marvel. Is she gonna be like cracking jokes 24/7? Is she like? But her character. I was really pleasantly surprised that her character was like funny. But she was funny because that was, like, what they wrote her as, you know what I mean? Like, that was her personality. Like, but she also knew when to be serious. She wasn't just always cracking jokes at the wrong times.
I think she was a better version of Darcy, basically.
Yeah.
I feel like Darcy has been capable in some of the films, and she certainly helped. But I feel like Darcy helps with the tools that she has. And in this, we see Katie have growth and have a character arc, and she's able to accomplish something at the end of the film that she wouldn't have been able to accomplish at the beginning of the film. So I thought that was really cool.
I'm sorry, like, has Darcy ever been handed a bow and arrow before? No. So that's just character.
She walks around with a laptop.
That is character assassination, and I stand by it.
I'm just saying there's nothing she did at the end of Thor: The Dark World that she couldn't have done at the beginning, and when we pick up with her in WandaVision, she didn't learn any new skills. She's discovering new things, but
ask for coffee too.
No, she changed because she was a political science major, and then at some point between Dark World and WandaVision, changed her major, completed school, so that way she became an expert in that.
Fine, but she had all that development off screen.
Why do you not like my girl?
I think when she's in it, she is great, but they don't do that much with her, sadly. They don't do that much. Like, her character's just kind of there.
They didn't do
much. When she's there, I love it. When she's there, I love it.
They didn't do much with Thor in Thor: The Dark World.
I don't remember what. I'll be honest, I don't remember WandaVision that much. That was not my cup of tea.
I'm making a joke because Darcy ran into that guy and said, "Have fun in prison," and that was her scene for the finale of WandaVision.
In her defense, she was supposed to battle a gigantic evil bunny, but that got caught.
Yeah, well, like, there's so, like, I think WandaVision, the freaking theories ruined that. I seriously do, for me anyway.
See, I thought it was funny. I thought all the people making theories, I thought it was funny because every single week they got frustrated because they were wrong. So I enjoyed that. I enjoyed all that chaos.
Go ahead. I was just going to talk about the score on Shang-Chi because you didn't talk about, like, the overall, like, the original music. Joel P. West was the conductor or whatever, and he had, like, one of the best themes, I think, for a superhero. Like, like, Shang-Chi's theme was really, really good. Like, every single time, like, especially outside the skyscraper on the side of that building, that music or whatever that he did was really good.
Yeah.
I liked it.
Yeah. So, yeah, do you guys have any final thoughts on the movie?
Yeah, definitely go see it. It's definitely one. Go to the theaters to see it. Don't wait.
Yeah,
because it made 71.4 million domestic, which is really good this week. So I'm really proud that they made that much.
Yeah, and I was hopeful of it, you know, for it to perform well because I think, you know, this probably determines whether or not things get pushed into next year. I think a lot of big films are looking to this film to see how it does, because if you have something with less marketing, with less buzz behind it than Shang-Chi, you don't stand a chance of making, you know, any money this year. So I was you know, hopeful that this film would perform well, and, you know, it was awesome to be in the theater and to realize, you know, you're 10 minutes into the movie and you haven't heard a word of English spoken yet.
Yep.
I think Marvel is, you know, I mean, they make very sort of calculated risks, and I think they wanted to see what they could do and have a more tasteful, you know, portrayal of these characters, and, you know, they were sort of unapologetic, you know, in the beginning of, like, no, these characters will not be speaking English, we're not making it, you know, easy for the people who don't want to just succeeds on multiple levels. It's definitely in probably my top 12 or so MCU films. I can't wait to rewatch it.
Yeah.
And I definitely want to see it in the theater again, because I think that third act, seeing Te Lao on the big screen, you know, you really benefit from being just completely immersed in that world.
Yeah, it's a great movie.
How about you, Tom?
Yeah, I mean, I thoroughly enjoyed this film. It's one that I think anyone who's big into the MCU should obviously watch, not just because it looks like it's playing a key part in the future as we know it. I just think it's a solid movie overall. I also look forward to watching it again, and yeah, I think if you get a chance to watch it and you feel comfortable in the area that you're living in to go see it. If not, you know, it's totally understandable.
It'll be on Disney Plus probably in a couple months.
Yeah, I would imagine by Christmas you'll be able to watch
Christmas,
this.
Christmas, I could see it. Yeah, I can see that
Christmas. By Christmas, I can imagine you can watch this in your house on Disney Plus. So
hopefully everyone gets vaccinated and wears a mask, and we all can see Spider-Man in theaters in December.
Dude, our home, man. I would love a packed theater to see that.
Absolutely.
It's a nice stream. It's a nice stream. Yeah, that's my faith in humanity right there for you. But anyway,
yeah.
So, Malik, why don't you tell people where they can find you, where they can listen to your show?
You can just look me up. I'm on Spotify. I think I'm on Apple also. But yeah, Spotify, Moves for Real Pod, but that's also my Twitter handle. So you can find me on Twitter. That's mostly where I'm active on a lot. It's where I'll keep you up to date what's going on, personal life and with my show. So hope to chat with you guys on there.
Absolutely, and guys, make sure you go give them a follow on Twitter. Give them a follow on whatever streaming or podcast streaming system that you use, and make sure that you give the show a listen, because it really is fantastic. Malik, thank you so much for finally being able to come on the show and chat with us. It's been fantastic to have you join in on the fun.
Yeah, it was nice, you know, chatting with you guys, you know, talking on, like, we've been talking on Twitter DMs for a while, and I'm like, man, I'm trying to get on here and talk to you guys.
Yeah, it was a pleasure having you on.
Yeah, man, it was a pleasure talking to you too, Alex, for the first time, also.
I was glad to see an opportunity and jump, because, yeah, I think I gave you less than 48 hours of prep from this, just the initial, like, so, you watching Shang-Chi?
But not Thursday, like I can normally do. I have to wait. I had to stay spoiler free for so long. It's too long.
That's got to be rough. That's got to be really rough. Yeah, I watched on Tuesday night, so. not to brag. It's just I died. I didn't really have to deal with spoilers with this movie all that much.
I was hurt, Tom. Because I suspected you were watching it Wednesday night, and when I texted you and I was on Wednesday, and I was like, you watching Shang-Chi at midnight? And you were like, watched it last night. I'm like, you motherfucker.
He asked me like Wednesday, he's like, are you seeing Shang-Chi? And I'm like, yeah, like that movie doesn't come out till like Thursday or, you know, this weekend. And I'm like, you've probably seen that already or something.
On Twitter, if you would have looked, Alex, you would have seen that I posted, guess what I'm watching tonight on Tuesday night.
I missed that one. I didn't see that.
You could have put two and two together. Set that thing to notifications for tweets for your own friggin' show, Alex. I'm telling you, man.
I know. I should really interact with our show.
I should probably interact less.
Tom just tells me when to pick up the phone, and I say, all right.
I'm here.
That's my involvement.
Yeah, you contribute more.
But I love and appreciate all you guys.
Yeah, and guys, if you want to follow us on Twitter and see the madness that we're talking about, you can follow us at MoviesWork. If you enjoy this episode, you want to hear more of our episodes, you can listen wherever you're listening right now, or on Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Spotify, Podchaser, so many others. Make sure that you are giving likes, follows, ratings, reviews, whatever. It really helps with getting our show out there so more people can think twice about it. Also, make sure that you're doing that for Malik here for Movies For Real. So, Malik, again, one last time, big thank you for coming on the show.
Yeah, anytime.
And yeah, this will not be the last time that you're on the show.
Yeah, unlikely.
Yeah, this is my last time, guys. I actually did not enjoy it at all.
I'm
you tell us that after the fact. You tell us that off air.
I'm waiting for the time that we have someone on, and I DM them like, "Hey, thanks again for being on the show. It was a great time." The little check goes blue to show that they read it, and they never respond. That's what I'm waiting for that to happen one of these days.
We've had a good handful of only one time guests, so there might be some sort of a correlation there.
Some of it's just scheduling, you know. You got people across, you got people across the pond and all that kind of stuff. So you got all the scheduling stuff you got to figure out. But I don't think there's not a single person we've had on here that I wouldn't be happy to have on again. So
absolutely.
So, but guys, that's gonna be it for the show. So thank you so much for tuning in, and for Movies After Work, I'm Thomas.
I'm Alex.
Be kind. Be safe, and have a good day at work.